And we're here with our 59th episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name's Drew Grizzick.
And I'm Alex Moxon. Hi.
Hey. So how's it going? How was your week? Did you make it out to anything? Actually, we haven't talked for a while about you and your progress with coding. What's been going on?
Well, I've actually had a fair bit of time to work on that. So I focused on a JavaScript tutorial, which was a six-hour tutorial, which ended up being about 30 hours worth of work. So I was following along and creating my own things. It was really a lot of fun. It was for absolute beginners. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it in my blog. So yeah, Bob Tabor via Codec TV is who put that out. And it was sponsored by Microsoft. So basically I learned so much. So how to create a simple web page in a browser using a text editor, operators and keywords, conditional logic, functions, arrays, looping statements, global versus functional scope, working with external JavaScript files, object literals, working with the DOM, jQuery, fundamental selectors and events.
Sounds like a lot of words. So let's talk about some of them and what you learned about them. So you said something about creating web pages with mm-hmm. JavaScript.
Yeah.
How did that work?
So basically using Pluma and writing some code out, opening it in a browser and seeing it execute, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool.
So what kind of code?
Just little simple examples, links and photos and things where you hover over and click and it changes the behavior in a web page, resetting that and changing the code and seeing it do something else. So it was really a lot of fun. My next exploration is going to be doing that in Node. So I'll spend
Why in Node?
It seems to be a popular and very pervasive language, and that's something, it works a little bit, well, not language, methodology. Rather than working in the browser, you're working directly off of a server, from what I understand. So it's my basic rudimentary knowledge of Node at this point, which
sounds
will hopefully
cool.
grow.
And then, so you said you also learned, actually, you brought up a lot of things.
I did.
Data structures, did you say? Arrays?
Yeah, working with arrays and looping statements, so for statements. What else? Getting things to add as you click and getting things to change as you click, which is kind of fun.
So that's an interesting thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. how would I go about if I wanted to get things to add as I click? How would I do that?
I think creating a for statement and having +++, and I forget exactly the structure of it, but mm-hmm. there's three arguments that you enter as function, and then there's three different things. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, wow, you actually understand this. This is good. So basically just stepping through the exercise. Yeah, just following along, taking the code. And I didn't copy any code. I actually wrote out all of the code, mm-hmm. which I thought was good to kind of get used to the different standards of tabbing and actually understanding the functions versus just copying them over.
Yeah, maybe. I like to do that as well. Maybe it's, you know, on the one hand, you're building muscle memory. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, maybe you're looking at it, you're reading it, and then you're copying it over. So you're seeing it again and you're processing in your mind at least. Oh, I've got to use this curly brace here mm-hmm. or over there. Or, whoa, how come this doesn't work? And, you know, sometimes you look back at the code that's in the example and in your text editor, looks the same, but then you start to look a little closer and you mm-hmm. might see, oh, missed a semicolon or things like that. I think that's a great way.
Yeah, semicolon or a space or a cap or things like that. I do like how particular it is because you can look back and it's not an it depends sort of thing. It's exact. It either is or isn't. And I really like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Okay. So yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. So you said if you wanted to get something, so you click something mm-hmm. and you have it increment a number or something. You said you start with a for loop.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So are you clicking the for loop?
No, you're actually clicking an alert that pops up. So it'll be create an alert. And when you click or click on a link, it will add different things. So it'll either increase or decrease in value or change depending on what arguments you pass through.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I spent some time on that and then working with the document object model. And final lesson was working, actually,
so
second
what's,
final.
So document object model, what's mm-hmm. that?
So that is the DOM. Mm-hmm. Document object model. Oh, I don't know how I would best describe this. Okay, I'm blanking on how to give you a good description, which means that I need to spend some more time working with this because I think until you can talk to somebody and explain what something is, you don't fully know it. You can understand it, but not to the full extent.
Yeah, I think it's being able to explain something really helps, or trying to explain things as well. It helps to expose maybe gaps in one's own knowledge. Mm-hmm. For me, I really don't spend any time with JavaScript almost at all. And I said, you know, I want to spend more time with it mm-hmm. this year, which is actually, it's kind of interesting. It's a bit of a, I don't know if a double-edged sword is the right word, but there's kind of two big sides to it. One, I want to spend more time doing it, but two, I'm not actively working on anything using it. So it coming up with maybe contrived examples, or you know, going through a tutorial, but not really having something to work on to sink my teeth in. So I think I've got to maybe come up with something. Now I've got really great excuses, like I'm super busy, mm-hmm. or I want to drink beer tonight.
You know, that's a good excuse. Right?
And I mean, sometimes it is a good excuse, but not all the time. So I think I need to really set aside a time. If that's, you know, Wednesday evenings, I'm going to go home and I'm just going to work on a project, mm-hmm. then so be it. I tend to think that more time than Wednesday evenings is needed
yep.
for things, maybe like an hour a day. So, you know, maybe I'll wake up early and spend an hour each morning doing something. That might be kind of fun. But anyway, so going back to the DOM, or like the document object model, my understanding of what that is just treating a document as an object.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure when, where, or why this came about, but I might imagine, going back to some of the text that I've read at times, I remember, you know, reading like a lot of computer books, and mm-hmm. I guess I was in the habit of reading a book cover to cover at the time. So I'd get a non-computer book, and I'd be really interested in the introduction or preface, or sort of any sort of text on the cover as well. Maybe some other author wrote something in praise about this book, and I'd want to read everything for some reason. And so I felt the same, I guess, with a lot of computer books, and they'd always start with this whole history of computing from like early ages. And so I think Sir Tim Berners-Lee was working at CERN and wanted a way to share documents, or not just share documents. Sorry, they had ways of sharing documents, but CERN, a research institute in Switzerland, I believe, and has a lot of physicists and some pretty cool stuff. But so them and some other government agencies, I think like DARPA, I don't know if they were sharing much information, but definitely other research institutes and universities were sharing information way, way before what we have is the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, you know, the internet existed, there were internet works, I guess. And so they were sharing documents, and you wanted a way to be able to, you know, you're looking at a document and maybe you see a reference to something, to be able to click that reference, and that would take you to another document, hyperlinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of the where HTML came from. And so I believe he still sits on a board of the World Wide Web Consortium, or W3C.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of like the idea of a document as an object, or the DOM.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where that came from. I'm treating this document as an object that I'm going to be able to manipulate.
Makes a lot of sense.
But I'm not really sure, so maybe that's something I should also research.
Well, when you start your JavaScript journey, maybe that's something you can work on.
Yeah, I've done some stuff in JavaScript, so I should.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't usually do it. I don't use it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, so how was your week? Did you go out to anything?
I did. I actually went out to the CodeCore open house last night and ran into you there.
It wasn't an open house.
Oh, right. It was the kickoff.
The Code Cohorts kickoff. So
right.
That's something they started doing. I'm not sure which cohort they started doing it with, but they started doing a, after the first week, so the first Friday,
mm-hmm.
they'd have a kind of a party, a welcome and alumni party, so that, you know, people coming to the bootcamp could kind of feel more welcome and meet other people that have gone through it.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have, you know, plus ones or more are welcome, which is why I invited you and Adam. And I thought that was really great and a good chance to kind of mingle with the next generation of developers.
Totally. No, it's yeah. awesome. I really like when there's an aspect of mentorship in any kind of an organization, and it's an active thing. It's not just we've got these mentors on paper, but when people actually come out to events and help the current cohort going forward, I think that's really important.
I think so as well, yeah. And I think a lot of the meetups around are really great places for that. There's a lot of really cool people and really cool stuff out there. In fact, like when I moved back to Vancouver from not living here for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
one of the first things I did, actually before even moving back, I looked at meetup.com and I kind of joined all of the things I thought I might be interested in. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting a bunch of email notifications, which was really cool because I had to filter it down the things that I wasn't interested in, mm-hmm. or get rid of the things I wasn't interested in. But it was really cool because I got to see all these things happening. And it was months before I actually went to any of them. But when I did, wow, it was a great community. And I got to meet some really cool people. People, interestingly enough, the very first meetup I ever went to, I still see people from them because it was the Ruby meetup, the Fan Ruby meetup, okay. which I went to this week and was awesome.
Right. How was that?
It was awesome. So
specifically what made it awesome, though?
Well, specifically what made it awesome, a number of things. Okay. I got to say, Philippe, who's been organizing it, made it super awesome.
Good.
He was able to tap the keg and make sure that drinks kept flowing. But yeah, it was great. It was well attended. Unbounce was a great place to have it. A really nice space there. And Jeremy from Zipline gave a really cool talk that I think it touched upon some really good things and really made me think about some things, you know, that I was even able to start to think of and even implement a little, as in, you know, bringing some ideas up during some planning meetings that we're going through. It was really cool. So the title was something like Refactoring Rails, okay. for fewer tears, more happy faces and money. And the way that he talked about sort of their development process at Zipline and the product they're working on made it sound super awesome. Like, you know, he had a background where, I don't remember exactly, so I might be quoting this a little bit wrong, but I think he finished university and he went down to Silicon Valley and was working at some pretty cool places with some pretty cool people, mm-hmm. some interesting startup stuff, ended up at Yahoo for a little while, and then went out and did his own thing. But that gave him some really good connections. He met some really great people and he was working on some really serious stuff. At Yahoo, he had a really, I think, he didn't really seem to brag about it or anything. I thought it was a really cool sounding job, mm-hmm. where he got to prototype things out. So all these new ideas that they're trying, and that was working in Rails. Mm-hmm. And it was a time where I guess Rails was just kind of starting to gain some traction, but it was a perfect thing for, you know, really rapid development and, you know, prototypes, which
right.
would be awesome. I mean, if you're working with a huge tech company, and this is like 10 years ago, and so Yahoo was still relevant, maybe they still are. Yeah, so it sounded really awesome. And by the time he got to where he's at now, Zipline, mm-hmm. you know, it was him as the developer. That was the development team. And they had a really great partner who had a lot of experience in retail, which is the area where they're solving problems. Mm-hmm. For the first year, it was just the two of them. So he was the only one doing the development. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if in the first year or by the second year, he said something like they were, you know, had customers paying them like $1.5 million for a 2-year contract or 3-year or something. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
And that's two people. And then they recently grew and they hired some people. Adam, I can't even think of his last name right now, not Dimitri, but Adam's given some really great talks as well, like years ago now, I guess, but about like code refactoring and mm-hmm. also a really cool developer. And so he's now on board with this team. It sounds like they have a really amazing product, mm-hmm. an amazing team, a great culture and code base that's actually fun to work on and work with because the developers have a nice level of autonomy and it's not a mess,
okay.
which sounded pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And so some of the points that he brought up with refactoring, I kind of wondered, you know, did he start out with a really long presentation with a bunch of refactoring in it and then refactor his presentation? So you get a lot of the stuff was, you know, don't do it. You know, you've got a feature that nobody's using. So I really liked this. They talked about, you know, having like a to-do list, mm-hmm. and maybe the list had like bullet points under it. So you could click on it and open up the list within the list. Mm-hmm. And they thought this is a pretty interesting feature. They're like, well, you know, how important is this feature? Maybe we need to go in and refactor this so that there's better performance because there's some performance issues with it. Mm-hmm. And so the first step that they took was to put in some Google Analytics scripts, mm-hmm. to see, you know, what percentage of the users is using this? How much of an impact does this have? Should I spend some time refactoring this, however long that might take and whatever implications that may have to the rest of the system? Mm-hmm. And they found it was, you know, 0.64% of users were clicking on this. So you know what they did?
What did they do?
They removed that feature.
Nice.
Rather than refactor the code, mm-hmm. to make it more performant, they removed it because nobody was using it.
And sounds like a sound decision.
Right? But that's only a decision I think you could make if you knew that nobody was using it.
That's true.
And I kind of wonder, you know, I kind of wonder, like, how do you do it? You have this startup, and I guess maybe talk to your customers, see what they want, mm-hmm. get some feedback, put out a feature, see if people are using it. Hey, you know what? That one person really felt strongly about this, but nobody else cares about it. And it's costing our development team 50% of their time and nobody's using it. Well, maybe we'll just drop that.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important to go talk to your customer base and figure out, you can have a great idea, but if nobody actually uses it, is it all that? Maybe it's still a great idea, but it's not a useful idea.
Yeah, I think there's maybe other things to be considered there as well, though. Like why is nobody using it?
Right.
Is it a great feature that people would use if they knew it existed? They just don't know to click on that, and, mm-hmm. or whatever the feature may be. So there might be some other things behind that. But at the same time, if you can remove code and remove features from your system, mm-hmm. that sounds pretty awesome, especially if you're, you know, still going forward and making money.
Yes, I agree.
So that was one thing. And there were some other things, like he talked about, like infrastructure, for example. You know, and kind of rolling your own infrastructure. You can spend a lot of time on developing your infrastructure versus, you know, just using a service like Heroku, where all of a sudden that's all taken care of for you. Now, that may make sense with certain applications and maybe not with others, but mm-hmm. certainly doesn't seem to, it wouldn't be something that would be feasible for what we're working on. Although, had we made different architectural decisions earlier on, mm-hmm. maybe it would be.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was a great talk. It was wonderful. And I believe Zipline is hiring some more. So I think they're a team of four, something mm-hmm. like that, with some amazing products. And I think they're working remotely as well. And the developers have a lot of autonomy. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, maybe we can put a link to their page if anyone wants to reach out.
Yeah.
Sounds good. The other meetup that I went to is, of course, the regular one that I go to on Thursday, the DDD Secure SES meetup. Mm-hmm. So we're starting off a new series, and we'll get into event storming next time, but we've changed up the format a little bit, where we have an intro, about 20 minutes, to kind of explain the concepts of event storming and event-sourced systems, and then also CQRS and domain-driven design. So, and then from there, we're going to be actually building out a product. So we're still filtering out the ideas, but we're looking at a couple of options. One other thing that we have for the next little while is mulled wine. So if anyone wants to come out and have some mulled wine, it's pretty awesome.
So what is mulled wine?
Mulled wine is, it's wine that's been warmed but not boiled, and it has fruit. So it's kind of like a warm sangria with brandy. It's delicious. Spiced and almonds and all sorts of other things. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, interesting. So it's interesting that you would think that somebody who didn't know what mulled wine was would know what sangria was.
Fair enough. Sangria is like the summer version, the cold version. No, it's basically just wine and brandy and spices and a little bit of fruit and almonds and raisins and fruit, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's delicious. So it's really nice, especially on a super cold day where, you know, it's a long day. It's freezing outside. It's dark. You come in, there's this awesome meetup, and there's mulled wine. So you warm your bones, and it's great. It's
very really good. Cool. Yeah. So you said you're kicking off a new series talking about what event source systems are, mm-hmm. about CQRS. So kind of starting with a background on what this is.
Exactly.
And then where does that go?
So we'll get it more into event storming next time. We were hoping to do that with this last session, but it was a smaller group. So I think we're going to do more this next week and actually look at the system and break it down and brainstorm via event storming. So we'll see how that plays out, and then we'll hopefully have at least some of the base features covered through that process. And then whether or not we need to continue that for another week, we may do that depending on the size of the system. But it's a little bit more organic this year rather than the 3-week series that we had last year.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So what about this week coming up? Anything that you're planning to go to? I guess obviously the DDD Secure SES Practitioners Meetup.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there. There's a few things that look really interesting. I may not go to this, but I would definitely check this out. I'm not going to be available that day. There's an Ask Me Anything with Hussein Halleck at Launch Academy on Monday at 6. Mm-hmm. So that would be really interesting. We've had Hussein on as a guest before. He's a really awesome speaker. So yeah, definitely, if you've got the time, check this one out.
So what would that be? Ask Me Anything.
Well, it depends. I mean, Ask Me Anything usually can be everything from Ask Me Anything within a specific topic or pick.
Well, you mentioned this would be something you'd want to go to. So mm-hmm. I was asking in reference to at that meetup, what type of questions would you ask Hussein?
Well, good question. So his presentation is, let's talk about your startup roadmap and your entrepreneurship journey. So I would think this would be geared to people that are just starting out startup and kind of don't really know where to begin. So some of the questions he's posing would be how to find and keep great people. Can you really build your startup without having to leave your day job? How to find and acquire customers while having well-branded and funded competition and other things like that. So he has a really interesting perspective. I definitely recommend going back and listening to our podcast in, I think it was November we had him on, if you want to find out more about him. But yeah, he's got a cool way of looking at things.
So those are the questions that you'd ask him?
I probably would. I'd also ask him, you know, what sort of unknowns did he run into? And those are often really valuable questions to ask. There's the known unknowns, like you don't know about a specific thing, but you're going to, you know that you need to address it versus the things that come and kind of hit you totally by surprise. And you're like, wow, where did that come from? I had no idea. When you're talking with someone who has more experience, they can usually point out things to watch out for and things to plan for.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm not really sure if there's much that I'll go to this week. I think I'm probably going to have a pretty busy week. But if anything, on Saturday from 11:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., mm-hmm. and just looking at the timeline there, I probably won't go to it. But, but it does seem pretty interesting. There's Vancouver Robotics Club for people who like building robots. And I got to say, that's something I think I would like to do, but I don't do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if I'm really the intended audience here. But that's happening over at Microsoft on the 11th floor of their Microsoft building on Georgia there, mm-hmm. above Nordstrom. And it might be pretty interesting. So that's the one that I'm got in the back of my head. And I think I've already kind of talked myself out of going, but I think it would be super fun. And I think that, you know, if I were someone who liked building robots, which I probably would be if I built robots, mm-hmm. then that would be a great thing to go do.
Well, maybe you should check it out.
Yeah. Hopefully see you at some of the meetups around town. All right, and we're here with our special guest, Annie Ngo of ProtoHack. Thank you for joining us, Annie.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
Awesome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about ProtoHack? What is ProtoHack? How did you decide to get involved or to start it? Mm-hmm. And how can we get involved?
Yeah, so ProtoHack, I like to describe is a place where amazing startup ideas begin. Mm-hmm. We host global events now in 23 cities, 8 countries around the world that take the typical hackathon experience and rid it of all code. Interesting.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So take the hackathon experience and rid it of all code.
Yeah, I mean, we emphasize...
So no coders allowed? Or?
I mean, coders definitely allowed. What we find is anywhere between 10 and 15% of our 100 plus participants at any event are in fact developers, programmers, have an engineering background, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. But the idea really is to, before we invest in that first line of code, whether it's in dollars or in time, to evaluate the idea. And we build these day-long events. One's actually happening today at UBC. Mm-hmm. It's January the 14th. And yeah, we emphasize ideation, brainstorming, prototyping, pitching, kind of all of the components that help to validate an idea before it goes into the tech world.
Right. That actually sounds really reasonable.
Mm-hmm. You would be surprised at how many developers and programmers we connect with and share with us the frustration of having spent 24, 48, 72 hours at a hackathon building something that at the very end they realize nobody wants.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So instead of just another farting app in the billions
who
of
who wouldn't
apps,
want that, though? I mean, to be honest. And I think that's kind of interesting. You said, you know, like 24, 48, 72 hours. That's still a relatively short time. You could, mm-hmm. you could spend, you know, weeks, months, years on mm-hmm. something and then find out that there's no sort of product market fit. So yeah, I guess how does ProtoHack's format help to solve that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can kind of walk you through what a proto hacker would experience. Uh-huh. Prior to the event, we host a happy hour where all of the attendees, anywhere between 50 to 150, will come, present and ask to one another and do a bit of matchmaking. We have these really cute name tags with stickers that identify you as a designer, a developer, a business person, or other. I'm not sure what other typically means, but I would go up in front of the audience and say, hey guys, my name is Annie. I graduated from UBC with a degree in poli-sci. I love sales. I love marketing. I have this incredible idea for how to disrupt mainstream media and journalism. as it stands. I have no idea how to design. So I'm looking for a designer and I'm looking for a developer to help really define what technologies can work with this. So if you're interested, holla at your girl. We'll disperse. Everybody will connect. We do a little bit of facilitating between all of the attendees. And there will be probably 30 teams that the next day go through the same process in the morning to kind of refine their teams and go through a number of workshops from design thinking to pitching to prototyping to whatever we feel is appropriate. But generally those three have access to a non-technical entrepreneur through a keynote. And we also offer mentors in design as well as pitching. At the very end of the day, there's a 90-second pitch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 90 seconds. It's kind of intense. To venture capitalists, to notable founders. And once that happens, we do a Q&A with the top five teams. The winning team takes home $15,000 worth of prizes to start their business the next day.
Very cool. So what's the catch, I guess? Are there themes around it? Do you have to build or have an idea around something in particular? Are there fees associated? Does ProtoHack then get a percent of the company?
That's a really common question. Mm-hmm. The last one anyways. So first, no. ProtoHack doesn't have any ownership of your ideas. And that's what's so special, I think, about hackathons generally is there's no attachment to ownership. And it really allows for this level of curiosity and creativity that, side note, doesn't translate that well in markets like China or markets like South Korea. I was going to say North Korea, but no, we're not in North Korea.
Yeah, I wonder what the market would be like for tech ideas in North Korea.
That might be something we have to explore.
Yeah.
I'm going to do some research on that for you guys. But what's the catch? We do charge typically for our city-directed events. And how the business works with ProtoHack is started off in San Francisco. Two of our co-founders, one's Blake, who is currently our CEO, both moved from Denver, Colorado, and had these big, bright ideas as everybody else who moves to San Francisco. Being the next Mark Zuckerberg, you know, building the next big, great tech company and not having a tech background, they started to find it was very, very frustrating. I mean, the story you hear is there has to be a CTO and a CEO. It's like the whole Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak thing. And if that isn't a part of the recipe, you're bound for failure. Yeah. They were not going to have any of that. So decided they were going to build this program that really empowered entrepreneurship and inspired innovation for the masses in San Francisco, and that is the non-technical person. Because what the lean model really implicates is that this is so necessary before you decide to go and invest tons of resources into the latter part of it. But anyway, so they did this, hosted a number of events in San Francisco, found it to be incredibly successful. People were paying for it. I think the tickets at some point got to be $150 for a one-day event, which is kind of unheard of. So that cycled through. They did a roadshow to Austin, Seattle, Los Angeles, all the major tech cities, and same level of success. I met them in Seattle.
Yep.
Fell in love with the process, did it completely wrong. I came in with my co-founder of the company at the time. Her name is Vicky, who's one of my best friends, who currently is actually still building the tech startup that we started together.
Very cool.
And we hired a designer to build our prototype for us. Came there, blinded us up, didn't want to talk to anybody, didn't even pitch to have people join our team because we were there to win the prizes and wanted to just prove that we were the SHIT. But clearly, we did it so wrong.
So did you win everything?
No.
Wow, what a shock.
We even had t-shirts with our logo on it. It was very tacky. But yeah, so that happened. Fell in love with the process. Was like, this needs to come to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. We need to bring this here. Brought it to Vancouver last year. Hosted, I think we're at about 10 events now in Vancouver. Premiered the first ever white label ProtoHack, which was for the Natural Resources of Canada.
Okay.
Yeah, that happened last year. Courtesy of Vicky, she's an incredible salesperson, found that extra dollar from the government. Right. And she allowed us to really position ourselves as a solutions provider for government, corporate, and academia. We hosted, the first ever Green City Hackathon, which was built around initially forestry and resources, and trying to figure out how to innovate in those spaces, but converted into more of a environmental friendly type experience to push towards. And I think in Vancouver, it was more about trying to find a way to get to that goal of 2020's greenest city in the world. We hosted the event in Ottawa and Vancouver. But yeah, so that's kind of a roundabout way of how I got involved with ProtoHack. Mm-hmm. We found enough success that Blake invited me to join the HQ team as the VP last January. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, no, 2 years ago is when we introduced Vancouver ProtoHack. Okay. Last January, I was invited to be the VP, and a couple months ago was invited to be a co-founder.
Very cool. Yeah, that sounds awesome. So just hearing you talk about ProtoHack makes me feel like this is definitely something I'd like to go out to.
Yeah.
And I'm also kind of questioning why I'm not a part of more hackathons mm-hmm. and those sort of experiences. But it sounds really fun. And it sounds like, you know, if you have this process where you're not just going out there and writing code, which can be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think those hackathons are great, but you're actually vetting an idea mm-hmm. and bringing that through to, like, I guess, a prototype.
Yeah.
So is that, what is a prototype?
Mm-hmm. So how I like to describe it as a non-technical person is the most effective way to visually describe or to communicate your idea. So there are so many amazing simplified tools now for people like myself, where I could effectively build a working app through Adobe XD, Proto.io, Envision App. Those are just a few of the partners that we work with. But before you decide to take this now validated idea and show it to a developer to build, I mean, I'm sure being technical yourself, you can recognize the need to have something like this, because there's this barrier in communication between the non-technical and the technical person. I'm going to tell you, like, I want it to look like this. And you're going to be like, what? Yeah. Show me. So it's a matter of just being able to show not only people who can validate your idea, but people who can build the idea. And that to me is what a prototype is.
Yeah, I've heard it kind of described. I think Charles described it to me as something like, you know, you want that thing that is going to be a visual representation. Mm-hmm. It looks nice. It looks like what the product will do. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a PowerPoint presentation or mm-hmm. something like that, but you can walk through the different steps and show it.
Exactly.
That's the type of thing that's a prototype that you can pitch investors and
yeah.
things like that with. Whereas as a developer, we often want to build out an MVP,
yeah.
a minimal viable product, mm-hmm. and it might look horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it maybe no design to it at all, but it functions and it works
mm-hmm.
and it actually works. And so we kind of tend to think, you know, this is way better than a prototype because it
yeah.
actually works. Mm-hmm. The prototype doesn't even work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas the prototype is like, it's the idea
mm-hmm.
come to life.
Yeah.
You know, it's whether like it actually works or not.
Visual embodiment of what the idea is, you
yeah.
know, like this is where the button goes. This is what happens when you click this button. Like these are things that a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah.
And it falls to the wayside way too often. And yeah.
So it's kind of funny that, like, I guess, ProtoHack came out from, you know, non-technical
uh-huh.
people or non-technical people. But this is, I think, a lesson that technical people especially could benefit from, because
definitely,
you know, spending the time building out something that works,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't solve a problem that anybody cares about
mm-hmm.
might be a really hard sell.
It's a laborious experience.
Yeah.
I mean, when Vicky and I were first pursuing the tech company that allowed us to meet the team at ProtoHack, they constantly told us, every single person we interacted with pitched to, one of you needs to learn how to code. So clearly between the two of us, it had to be me. So I learned on my own how to do CSS, HTML, even did a little bit of Ruby on Rails.
Thanks.
And it was exhausting. Like it's kind of like, to me, math. Or once you get it, it's very enjoyable. But to get to that point, and anything that I've built, even if I think at one point I built like a few lines that did a circle. And to me, that was just so exhausting, but so rewarding. And at the end of it, I was like, nobody wants this line with a circle.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of funny. Sometimes it can feel very disheartening
mm-hmm.
to see somebody that's like a wizard developer that's able to build something really quickly.
Yeah.
And that's often because, sure, they have a lot of experience, but also they know about libraries that exist
mm-hmm.
that they can just call that will really speed up some application development because it's already built. Like the
yeah.
circle you're talking about,
uh-huh.
you know, I could just type circle and now I have it because happens. I mean, the library that draws that circle, as opposed to maybe spending hours and even days
building that circle.
And so it's something that we can achieve, but it's an incredibly lengthy process to learn to code. And there's some, it can feel disheartening along the way, but I think it's also, like you said, super rewarding as an experience.
For sure. And I feel like if we could just harness those opportunities for innovation to something that was meaningful for the world, and had a place in the world.
Like Facebook.
Like the Facebook? I mean, what it's become anyways. I think it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how, you know, these things that, like, I half jokingly said, like, Facebook, because, you know, is it an important thing? And it absolutely is. It's become a way, a method of communicating that spans generations.
It
could be something like that is a very impactful thing. And the way that people have communicated, I'm sure a lot of good has come out of that.
You're right. It does span generations. I'm just thinking about yesterday, my mom. So one of my best friends, Brad, he added my mom on Facebook. And she was just telling me, like, oh, he's in Hawaii. Does he have children now? I'm like, no, mom. So that was just a random thought about how my mom uses Facebook. And that's how she stays connected now to my extended family in Vietnam, our extended family in California, and all through likes and comments. And it's really crazy to see, because not so long ago, I was on my phone texting, and my mom and dad are reprimanding me for being disengaged. And now at the dinner table, 10 years later, it's them who is disengaged.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, because you're maybe disengaged with that, but you're engaged with all these other things going on. I can remember that actually is reminiscent, I think, of, I don't know if you remember, but did you ever see those no cell phone signs in restaurants?
Yes.
That's definitely a thing of the past. You know, nobody puts those up anymore. And it's not really a problem. It's not like people are sitting there talking. I don't know why that ever would have necessarily been a problem. Mm-hmm. They were just loud by themselves and people felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I've seen that, and that is pretty annoying.
Mm-hmm. But what about just loud people in general? You know, like...
Volume level 5. That's what the new sign's going to be.
But I don't think anybody would even think of, you know, let's have a no cell phone sign, because it's such an important part of our day-to-day interactions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to ProtoHack. So I'm interested. I want to be involved. I want to go to a ProtoHack.
Yeah.
Where? When? How?
So in Vancouver, the next event that we have going on is April 29th. We've yet to confirm a venue, but you can purchase tickets on protohack.com.
Very cool.
You can attend, or you can host an event in the future.
So yet to confirm a venue, but do you have an idea whereabouts it might be? Is it going to be in Langley?
Probably downtown. So previous venues have been Code Core, Launch Academy. We have lots of Vancouver startup ecosystem partners that are great. Spacecraft in Burnaby was probably the furthest we've ever done it. Red Academy, which is also another design/coding school.
Broadway and Granville.
Yeah, soon to be downtown.
Oh, yeah?
Nice. I think so. No.
Oh, you mean Broadway and Granville? Yeah. So you called it.
Yeah. No. Well, not the event or the venue. Downtown. Yeah, Groundtown is growing. Nice. Says me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, if you're interested, protohack.com is the place to go. And we also host white label events. So like I mentioned, for the Natural Resources of Canada, we've also done one for Stanford MBA, for Wells Fargo. So a bunch of companies in the US. If your company is interested in inspiring some entrepreneurship or cultivating a sense of innovation and entrepreneurship in your organization, this is a huge opportunity. Feel free to reach out to me.
Very cool. Yeah, that sounds like there may be some really interesting ideas. So I think you'd mentioned solving forestry or natural resource problems. That sounds like a really, really fun one. I could think of other things as well. Mm-hmm. I know the government's making a lot of interesting initiatives with opening data.
Yeah.
And some of that data can really be used for some interesting things.
Kind of behind the scenes stuff that I'm not 100% sure. I'll go on the record, whatever. I was reached out to by Environment Canada to put on a number of events across the country. We're still working on that proposal and figuring out what that may look like. But the primary goal was for participants to utilize most effectively the open source data that we have available. Because right now there's a bunch of data.
Right.
that's not being effectively utilized.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of, I guess not exactly a chicken and egg problem, but somewhat reminiscent of it in that there's a ton of data that the government has and there's not enough people to just open all of it up and build out the APIs.
No.
And they don't have any idea what that should look like anyway because they don't know who'd be consuming it. Mm-hmm. And so they've taken some sampling of the data and made it open. And it's kind of, you know, like stumbling in the dark. Are people going to use this data? Are they going to care about that data?
Exactly.
How should we present it and then put it out there? And then people don't even necessarily know that it exists because they're not looking for it. Mm-hmm. And so you end up with maybe smaller numbers of people using it. And if you have a good success story, like somebody builds a company based on open data, they start making revenue, they're paying taxes, wow, it suddenly validates the whole initiative in government to start opening this up.
Exactly.
But if you don't have those, here's the dangerous part, I think, for us as a society. Mm-hmm. If you don't have any success stories, then the initiative may end up failing.
Absolutely.
Because it's public money being spent on things that nobody's using. Mm-hmm.
That is exactly why they reached out. Yeah. And it really does become this negative feedback loop. Mm-hmm. I just want to touch on the point that in addition to bringing to the forefront these opportunities for innovation, I think what ProtoHack does really well is it activates this group of people that wouldn't otherwise ever be interested, one, empowered, two, and felt like they were capable because now we're offering them the resources to be like this. I mean, right. I personally feel like, and with all due respect to developers and programmers and people who are tech savvy or in that space, all of the real innovation kind of happens before. And the best types of innovation happens with people who see no boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so one of my favorite events that I've done was an hour-long event. So normally they last about 12 hours. We did one that was an hour long with 150 high school students through an organization called Doors Open to Technology. And the type of solutions that they were able to come up with, these kids that were in groups of 10 that I was just hearing the chatter, were so much more sophisticated and so much more creative than when I would do events for corporations. Because, you know, at some point you get inundated with policy and bureaucracy and what can cannot happen. And even more so, I feel like that gets even narrower when you introduce people who do have technical skills, because they start to limit what can and cannot do, cannot be done, because they know what can and cannot be done.
Yeah, it can get, I think it gets really frustrating for me at least, and hopefully I'm not that person very often, but when people are, you know, constantly saying, we can't do this because of that, or no, this isn't going to work, nobody's going to like that.
Yeah.
No. And that's just really not fun.
No. Okay? Yeah.
So having these creative ideas and having something interesting and innovation is really cool. But then at the same time, I think that, so you might have a really interesting idea, you can build it out. So the technical side of it, as you said, I mean, it might not necessarily be a lot of innovation. Mm-hmm. And it might be a lot easier if you have this innovative product and you have the idea of what it is and what it does, and you have a prototype and you know what's going on and you're able to say, you know, we need these features and these are how they're supposed to work.
Uh-huh.
Then that's a huge part of the work, right? And
agreed.
Then you can just go and build it out.
Yeah.
But then the other part of that is also, if nobody knows about it, just like this data that they've opened,
exactly.
Nobody knows about it, they're not using it. So the marketing or the, you know, how do you get adoption?
You're spot on. And that's one of the things that's my favorite part about ProtoHack is I've attended other hackathons before. And if you are familiar with the optics, probably 10% are females. At every ProtoHack event, we see about a 50-50. And it's because the barrier to entry is so low. I don't need to know how to code. I have other skills I can bring to this, like marketing and branding, communications, design. Unfortunately or fortunately, because the events are this specific in terms of skill sets, you really don't do anybody a favor that's a female or that doesn't come from a home where technology is part of, you know, day-to-day processes. Like, had it not been for me growing up in Vancouver, I think, you know, if I lived in Vietnam in my little village, I would never have the opportunity to even interact with technology. And events like ProtoHack allow any and everybody to bring what they have to this process. And think about it. If we had a world where everybody was innovating and problem solving, how much better of a life would we have? How many more, you know, maybe we would have been able to cure cancer. I don't know. Like, this is just very optimistic thinking, but
yeah, I tend to agree with that line of thinking, mm-hmm. in that, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, mm-hmm. the average person didn't have the access, mm-mm. to just do anything, build anything, create anything. Mm-hmm. You can look at very simple things like take a picture. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, a camera was incredibly expensive.
Uh-huh.
Whereas now, you know, most people, even kids, mm-hmm. have, you know, mobile phones that take really great pictures.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing. And also happen to record video, or, you know, I remember as a kid being really interested in animation, mm-hmm. but classical animation. And so like drawing pictures and that stuff was, it was kind of hard. And it was to actually have the equipment to start to record that and to take these pictures and to play it back. You know, I didn't have my own equipment. Today, it would be so easy to just, you know, plug in a computer,
boom, exactly.
and get up and running. So maybe there's still obviously some cost associated with that.
For computer, sure.
But it's not like, you know, back then, mm-hmm. maybe $50,000 just to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing's true, I think, today with all sorts of business and all sorts of innovation. And it's not just if you're able to code.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you're able to use any of the resources available.
Any. You'd be surprised at how many people don't even bring a laptop to our events. I mean, you could do market research by going outside, checking in a library, mm-hmm. speaking to strangers. I know. Unheard of, right? So archaic. But and how many people, we offer templates of the iPhone or a tablet. Like 50% of the people will, like, the papers will be gone before I've handed them all out, uh-huh. to scribble on. And you'll see them flip through these templates and design the prototype with a paper and pen. So mm-hmm. it's interesting how technology and how non-tech can create such incredible technology, mm-hmm. you know? So some people describe it as an ideathon, which I love also, but I think it has more to do with really defining the product market fit, problem solution fit, design thinking.
So as far as like sort of established themes or areas of general topics, mm-hmm. is that only if you're doing the white label ProtoHack? And if it's a regular ProtoHack event, I guess the one in April,
mm-hmm.
is it anybody can come with any idea?
Yep. So we try to host our city. So how the business works is we have a headquarter in San Francisco. I live in Vancouver, and we saw Canada as this huge opportunity. So we also are exploring the option of starting a ProtoHack subsidiary in Vancouver. But beyond San Francisco and Vancouver, we have city directors all around the world that put on the events through our guidance and support. If you're interested in a different part of the city, feel free also to reach out on protohack.com. You can click either attend or host and apply to be a city director. Actually, based out of the number of events we did in Vancouver, we now have city directors in Sao Paulo, Brazil, in Dubai, UAE, as well as Chandigarh, India. So all of the regional leads are from Vancouver, and I get to meet with them quite regularly. So we have city directors that do that. And really the only times that we find the need to scope an idea around a theme is, yeah, like white labeled events, and or if there is a presenting sponsor or an idea that we're just so passionate about. So this kind of leads into the other thing that I do, from what I said earlier was a 5 to 9, is that I'm also the global events manager at PressReader.
Mm-hmm.
And can I quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool.
Love to hear about that.
So PressReader is home to 6,000 publications from across the globe. That includes newspapers and magazines digitally available. And I like to describe PressReader kind of as the Netflix or Spotify, but for newspapers and magazines. And especially during this existing mainstream media and journalism, political climate, it's a very, very interesting company to be a part of. So in addition to ProtoHack, I get to do this. I get to put on the vast events that they attend every year. And we're doing an event in D.C. on the 26th called PressReader Covers Politics. We're lucky enough to have speakers from The Washington Post, CNN, ABC. It's pretty stellar. And awesome. I feel like it would be pretty incredible to put on an event for my own pleasure and joy, is one that is about disrupting mainstream media. Mm-hmm. So maybe like a media hackathon.
I think that'd be really cool. So when we say mainstream media, what exactly do we mean?
So broadcasting, mm-hmm. I mean, just like how very easy to digest is like CNN. That's mainstream media, ABC, Fox, to some degree, Huffington Post, Washington Post. Yeah.
So, because I was thinking, I don't know if it falls into that area, but when you said mainstream media and disrupting, one of the first things I thought of was the way that media gets distributed.
Yes.
And, you know, you have like cable television still exists where you have a base package of whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, like $60, and then you can add channels on there.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't have the granular access, and I'm really surprised. Mm-hmm. Why can't I just say, I only want CNN, you know, broadcast all the time, and I don't want to pay $150 to just get that one extra channel that I only want to watch. Mm-hmm. Why not just have that available like at CNN.com, for example?
I'm with you on that, and I think... Oh, we can get into this huge conversation about it. This is really what I do. Every single day, it's these discussions. And it makes you, I feel like I've become a fence sitter what do you call it? Yeah, I don't really have an opinion anymore because there's just constantly two sides to every story.
Yeah.
But I think we can all kind of agree that the process, the distribution model, the business as a whole for publishers, mm-hmm. print publishers, for mainstream media is broken. So now that we know it's broken, let's fix it. Like, what are the solutions? Let's get people involved. And I think some of the coolest people to get involved are the consumers, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
The way that we define a journalism today is different, so different than even last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a hard time coming up with a good response to what's mainstream media, because mainstream media has become also Snapchat. Also, right. I mean, what do you call them now?
Social networks,
yeah. Like their Facebook is, although they would not like to be recognized as such, they are in and of themselves a media company. I think it's time to maybe redefine what journalism means, redefine what media means, and who a consumer is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think part of that, you know, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, people didn't have access to the resources that they do today. And now we have, you know, every person practically running around with media devices. So we have the ability to collect and share information in such interesting ways.
Yeah.
And it's not going to go backwards. It may, but most likely that's just going to continue, and we're going to get more and more interesting ways of sharing this information. So how do we deal with that?
And maybe that means bringing in some engineers and some developers and coders to get involved in that discussion. But I think this is a huge opportunity for the non-technical community to come out and have their voices heard. And why it's so important, I feel like, is the old definition, and I really do hope that this is what's going to continue forward, is the role of a journalist is to preserve the democratic process, you know, like to share and disseminate information.
Is that a journalist living and operating in a democratic society?
Yeah, well, yeah. So there's a huge discussion around it, but I mean, from a very altruistic, just a definitive perspective, that is what I would hope it to be. And it's our responsibility as consumers to ensure that as well. Like we have a responsibility to the news and to the media to be involved. And so, yeah, here's where it is. I think like when very rarely do we do these themed events unless there's a presenting sponsor who's like very keen on it, just for business, honestly. But in instances like this, I think it's important. Like I think it's my civic duty. Also on the other side of the coin, it's like this is a PR package in and of itself. It's just something I feel everybody should be involved in.
Very cool. Well, Annie Ngo, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast, and hopefully we'll see this idea happen at the next ProtoHack.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should be awesome. If people want to reach out to you, how would they best go about that?
So you can find us on protohack.com, or you can email me directly at annee@protohack.com.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Annie.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Sameroom for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups around town.